We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses. There is so much information out there tailored towards service providers, so we have carved out a space just for you. The creative entrepreneurs making and selling physical goods. We're firm believers that everyone has a story to share, and there is so much we can learn from each other's business journey. Whether you are just starting out or a seasoned business owner, this podcast will shed light on new strategies, inspiration, and action steps to help you grow your product-based business.
Hey friends, I'm Katie Hunt, and welcome back to Proof to Product. This week, I am chatting with one of our PaperCamp alumni, Cecily Moore, the owner of The Paper Curator. The Paper Curator offers bold, colorful, artisan goods that she hand makes in her Queens, New York studio. Cecily describes herself as an artist first, using traditional methods like watercolor and acrylic painting, brush lettering, marbling, and embroidery before lovingly digitizing them into their final product form. Being a maker, in addition to an entrepreneur, is very important to Cecily, and a foundational pillar in her business is to provide handmade, high-quality products. On today's episode, we're talking about how she turned her blog into a product-based business, why she believes in bootstrapping success at all phases of business, and how she has scaled her handmade products into wholesale. In this episode, we also talk about Cecily's PaperCamp journey. Things she learned, what she wanted to accomplish by attending, and the successes she had after she attended our PaperCamp e-course program. Now, we will be opening up enrollment for our PaperCamp e-course soon. It is our four-week signature program where we teach you how to prepare your products and your business for the wholesale market. This includes exhibiting at trade shows, building out your catalogs, and making sure that your products are priced right for wholesale. So to join that waitlist for our e-course, head over to proofToProduct.com/PaperCamp, and you can join our waitlist to be notified when we open enrollment. But enjoy today's show. Hey, Cecily, welcome to the show.
Hey, I'm so glad to be here, Katie.
I am excited to have you. Tell us your backstory of starting The Paper Curator. This was initially a blog, right?
Yeah. So it started as The Paper Curator. And originally, I was doing mostly scrapbooking and crafts project blog posts because I was working at a gym at the front desk. I was bored out of my mind. I was job searching for a job that was relevant to my BFA in fashion design. And I wasn't finding anything. So I thought, at least let me get this creative outlet going, where at the time it was like all the rage to like make advertising money and like do affiliate posts. And I was like, surely my blog will make tons of money. So
did it?
No, of course not. It made like 3 cents, but I like really enjoyed, you know, getting back into scrapbooking. It was something that I did all throughout childhood, and it kind of fell by the wayside when college hit and I had homework and all this other stuff to focus on. So it gave me a really good basis for structuring projects and actually getting to my scrapbook. And I would post, I had specific series that I would follow. Like every Thursday, I would post something. And every Sunday, I would post a sketch. And like, I got really into holding myself accountable by scheduling these kind of series on the blog.
That's smart. Well, then what was the first product that you actually launched and sold? Because you were using this just to document the creative things you were doing in your day-to-day life. But at what point did you decide, you know what, I'm going to like sell something through this or try to create something that I'm going to sell?
Yeah, so I had subscribed to all these monthly kits that would ship to you with all this product. And I was using it up, you know, constantly because I was doing so many pages and posts and things. But I found that if you didn't have children to document, or if you were single, or if you were like just in a relationship, you kind of like, I wanted younger, funner, more like broad products that were okay to just be documenting selfies. Like it was just me, like,
yeah,
sharing my life. And I had a ton of artwork experience that I just thought I could turn these into patterns and it would be a fun kind of extra exploration into paper. So,
okay. So explain what the first product was to me then. It was a way to highlight your selfies.
Well, it was, so I initially launched with scrapbook kits. So they were monthly kits that had some papers and some cards and some embellishments in them. And then I also did them as digital offerings as well. That would be like a print at home print at home okay. item as well.
Did you sell this through your blog, or did you from the get-go set up an Etsy shop or Shopify? Like, what was your plan there in the early days?
So my blog was hosted through Squarespace, which with the plan that I was on, like, had a store component that was completely free.
Oh, nice.
It was part of the software already. So I just started uploading products directly to my Squarespace site. And then I was able to easily link them in the tutorials as the products I was using because it was all under one roof. So
cool. Well, what was this transition from it being just a hobby, something you're having fun with, to it becoming a full-fledged business? What was that like?
So I started the blog in 2014. That was when I was going through this creative lack of inspiration, but I started Kits in 2016. So I really took a full 2 years to kind of develop that end. And after an entire like year and a little bit of doing a monthly kit, I had amassed so much artwork that
I
really wanted an outlet that was more tangible and easy to sell to more people that weren't necessarily in the scrapbooking niche. And so I thought, like, what better than cards and stationery, because it's still in line with the products that are paper based and it would like garner a broader audience. So in 2017, I launched stationery by going to a craft fair, basically. So it was my first like in-person event where I was selling goods. And that's when I launched my first collection, which was basically everything that I carry today almost, with some exceptions.
Yeah, you launched with a huge line. I mean, I know you on the wholesale side of things, so this is really great for me to hear the back end of how you started on the retail side with a craft show. But you had all your entire collection that you pretty much have now at that point, at the beginning?
It was basically a third of, a third of what I have now. So each season I release kind of a similar amount of product, all in the same types of categories. But yeah, I had done a lot of research and R&D and stuff to get that launch together. And it was,
let's share the types of products you sell with our listeners so they have an understanding of the types and the volume that you started with.
Yes.
Yeah, so, I think it's important.
So at my first craft show, it was one season worth of stuff. So it was four different notebook styles, and those included a multitude of interiors. So like the dot grid, the lines, the plane, that sort of thing. And I also launched cards. So at that point, I think I had about 30 to 40 card designs in a bunch of different categories, primarily like birthday at that point. And I also had at the time pencil cases in the confetti and folios in the confetti and gift tags.
And I should interject here and add that these are a lot of these are handmade.
Yeah,
products.
The majority of them are.
You sew them.
Yes.
Even the notebooks we're talking about had canvas covers that are hand stitched by name. Mm-hmm. You did that yourself?
Yeah. So at first they were much more time intensive because I didn't have as much of the machinery and tools that I like have invested in over the past few years. But yeah, they're all hand stitched, hand cut, hand bound, all of that. And the same with our like gift items. They're all I sew them on a machine, but they're all sewn by me and, you know, built together.
Right. Okay. So you started this craft show. You had this wide range of products. They were all handmade. They're all very beautiful, by the way. So you guys are going to have to check out our website. How did that craft show go for you?
It was interesting because it was at a maker fair, which I don't know how familiar everyone is with that, but it's basically like kind of a science engineering fair. And this happened to be a craft pop-up within this larger kind of conference situation. So it went well. And I definitely got so thrilled with just being able to talk to customers in person and see people like light up when they were looking at my products. But I could definitely tell that maybe the audience wasn't my core audience that I was trying to get to. So I ended up between the fall of 2017 and the end of 2018 doing another 8 shows after that, craft fairs. So,
oh, wow.
So after that, I ended up doing the Renegades and that sort of thing and really found my audience better with the subsequent shows. But it went well. I made a profit. I learned that I don't want to do outside shows anymore because it was in this like open field that was mud, but it hadn't rained in like weeks. So it was just a big dust storm. And with paper products, I was like, oh no, they're ruined. So some of my inventory, like the gift wrap and everything, kind of had to be donated to my personal use, but it was a little dusty after the fact.
At what point did you come to paper camp? And really, what was your goal for attending paper camp? Was it truly just to wholesale?
Yeah. So I did the paper camp e-course in the fall of 2018. And mm-hmm. that was because I had been doing, as I said, like pop-up after pop-up after pop-up, direct to customer. And I really enjoyed those, but I didn't think for me with my availability of time and everything that it was viable to continue doing that long term and to make like a sustainable business. So I knew that I dreamed of going to the stationery show. I had been planning on going in 2020 since like I launched stationery. I was like, maybe by 2020 I'll be ready. And then I saw a listing for this e-course version of the paper camp. And I was like, you know, I of course consulted my family and was like, am I crazy? Should I do this? And I was like, okay, well, I'll attend paper camp in the fall of 2018, and then maybe like I'll take my time until I launch in 2020. But the paper camp just inspired me so much, and I felt so ready after like learning all of the ins and outs of like what a trade show needed to look like that I was like, I can totally do this in February of 2019. So that's when, after doing the fall paper camp, I decided to sign up for NSS and launch that right away in 2019. So like first of the year.
Which I think is so incredible. And it's fun to see you talk about it because I remember being super impressed with your products when you came through camp. And, but you had, so when most people come to camp, there's certain things that people are missing, right? Mm-hmm. Like they don't have their product ready, or they don't have their wholesale sales tools ready, or they maybe need to shift some of their pricing for wholesale. But you kind of had that stuff dialed in pretty well. I think it's because your R&D was so thorough. So for you, the next piece, it sounds like, was just how do I do these shows? And we obviously helped with that. But but you had the pieces ready. And I think it's worth noting that you had done such a great, thorough job of doing the research and development on your products before you actually launch them to determine whether or not you could make the margins work and the pricing and the structure and all of that. And even fulfillment too, given that these are handmade products, that gets tricky for you because you have to make sure you've got enough inventory and the systems in place to maintain that. Right?
Yeah. So that was like one of my biggest learnings from paper camp. And what I was most concerned about with before launching wholesale was the pricing and like the standards and making sure that I was following what the industry was doing. And I mean, I had done all of the Googling under the sun, but there are just some things that are better heard from people that have the experience. And so after attending paper camp, I did shift some things. I had my cards previously at the 5x7 A7 size.
Yep, I remember.
And I did knock them down to the A2 size, both for profitability and ease of printing. But that was a transition that I had to make. And my pricing was pretty well researched, and I found that out, which was helpful. But it's always, you know, nice to have a community backing you that is also like,
oh yeah,
does this make sense? And if it's digitally printed, it's this. If it's foiled, it's this, and that sort of thing. So yeah, that really was my biggest concern before even bothering to set up the sales tools, like the catalog and everything.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to put all that work in if the product wasn't right. And so
of course,
it was kind of just that pat on the back, like, okay, you're moving in the right direction. And then right. with all of that in place, I kind of felt a lot more prepared. I had no idea what to expect going into a show. I was like, I could walk out with one order or like 50 orders, like who knows? Yeah. So I just focused on making enough inventory that I felt comfortable. And then I really do a longer processing time due to the handmade nature of the items. And I'm just upfront yep. with that with people who are placing orders. And it ended up being like pretty easy for me to just stagger them in a way that made sense.
That's awesome.
For fulfillment.
I know that you are a firm believer in bootstrapping success. What does that look like to you in the day-to-day operations of your business? And why do you feel that way?
Aside from just not feeling comfortable taking on like credit for the business, I think that it doesn't make sense to go so huge that then you can't reel it back. I mean, I am a one-person show aside from input from others or whatever the case may be, but I really believe that if it's going to work for me long-term, it needs to be sustainable in a financial sense. So I've really only invested in materials that I continue to use and research into new product categories that are kind of pulling off of previous developments. So I can order one material and then use it for 6 different items, which then lowers the cost of each of those items. And by making everything in-house, I don't have to have a lot of overhead or inventory on hand. I just have to have the raw materials and I can make them as orders come. And that way I'm not sinking a lot of money into inventory that might not sell down the road. I'm really just fulfilling things as they come. And as I find new tools that I think will make the process easier for any of the manufacturing that I'm doing, I really look at the numbers and see, like, how much time will this save me? Is it going to pay for itself in, you know, 5 sales, in 10 sales, in a year, like, and what those numbers really look like? And I don't really jump on new machinery or anything until I know that it's legitimately going to make my life easier and be financially beneficial.
I think that makes a lot of sense. I think you are in a very particular niche area with the handmade goods where you need to truly be. I mean, everyone in business, in my opinion, needs to be bootstrapping and thinking of how to do things as inexpensively and seamlessly as possible. But you in particular, it's a little more tricky because you're not just outsourcing your cards to somebody else or your pouches to somebody else. You're not, you know what I mean? Like, you're doing it in-house. So your time is a factor as well as the material costs.
Yeah. Any way that I can make the process so much faster or so much smoother, I really do a lot of research into it, but I don't necessarily pull the trigger on something until it's like kind of tried and tested. But there have been some shifts that have been super instrumental in making my life considerably easier.
Tell me more about those. What are they?
So when I first launched notebooks, I was literally hand cutting because I bind them flat and then fold them and turn them into the size, the finished size that they are. I was literally hand cutting them with an X-Acto, like over and over and over. Mind you, these are like 80 pages of a notebook. So it was very intensive on my body to do that for, you know, hundreds of notebooks. But I, you know, did a lot of research and I found a paper cutter that is obviously industrial and can just cut 4 notebooks at a time. And now it's literally saving me hours on end from every single time that I do production for those. So
were these decisions, I know you did research, I know you thought things through, you, you know, considered your time that you'd be saving by bringing on these pieces of equipment. Are you a quick decision maker or are you somebody that takes a little more time before you decide to pull the trigger on spending money on new tech or new tools or any of that stuff?
I'm very decisive. If the money is available and it will make my life easier, generally I will do it. And for me, I'm looking for the longevity of what the investment is going to do for me. Like, buying this paper cutter opened me up to be able to manufacture more, which allowed me to do wholesale. Like, I don't know that I would have felt comfortable doing wholesale had I been doing my old processes. So it really was hammering out that process to a point that I felt comfortable. If I get an order of 100 notebooks, can I do it in a reasonable time? Yes, I can. This is why. Mm-hmm. And that's the sort of investment that I'm willing to make. I don't do a lot of investment in technology that I don't need right now or that sort of thing. I don't have an iPad. Like, everyone illustrates by an iPad. I haven't made that plunge yet because I do everything traditionally still, and that works for me.
I love it. Let's talk about growing. You mentioned, you know, this equipment helped you really ease into wholesale or do wholesale at all because it helped you increase your efficiency and the volume in which you could create these products. There are significant challenges to handmade goods to sell those to the wholesale market unless you can figure out those processes and systems. Are there any other things that you did to ease that transition for you aside from equipment?
I think for me, I did a lot of like following other people in the business that also do handmade goods, and I kind of followed their stories to see how they've scaled. And, you know, I think seeing that there is a structure in place for businesses that are a lot larger than mine with handmade goods, hand-painted goods, that sort of thing really gave me the feeling that if I do get to a point where I need to start outsourcing, I can easily find someone to hire in, you know, in-house or, you know, send things off. And I haven't gotten there yet, but I think that just researching the sustainability of it from like looking at outside businesses has been really kind of the pep in my step that I need to know that I'm like on the right path and that it is a path that is able to be continued down the road.
Yeah, I think the biggest piece there is that there are options, right? There's different ways that you can do it and still grow and scale. But I know that's a fear that a lot of smaller handmade businesses have of, you know, I'm making this thing one piece at a time. You're cutting notebooks 80 pages at a time. You know, like, how am I going to scale this up to serve a wider audience, whether it's on the retail side or the wholesale side? So it sounds like you've been very thoughtful and intentional in how you've done that so far, but also keeping your options open of realizing there's other people doing this, so I can figure this out too. Your optimism is definitely there.
Yeah, for sure.
And I mean that in a positive way of like, we can do it. I told my 5-year-old the other day, I'm like, there's always a solution. We can always figure this out, you know, and the same is true in business. So.
I mean, there's always the question of like, do you outsource to China and like get everything shipped to you? And yeah, that is easier 100%. Well, I mean, it has its own challenges, but it's easier from my perspective to not be making every single item. But I think there is so much added value in having a made in America handmade one-of-a-kind product. And I think that is, like, I've come to the decision that that is a core part of my business and my message. Mm-hmm. And so just realizing what I want to focus on and then how to make that work in a larger capacity, yeah. I think has been, you know, a challenge within the last year. But
yeah, but I think you've handled it really well. And I think you're continuing to evolve as your business evolves. And again, being open to opportunities is good there. So, okay, going back to this bootstrapping mentality. Mm-hmm. And your expansion into wholesale, let's talk about the trade shows. Like, how did you weave this bootstrapping mentality into your trade show budget? What did you skimp on and what did you splurge on for your first two shows?
So the nicest thing is that I live in New York. So I knew that automatically I was saving money on housing and transportation. I didn't have to ship anything to Javits. Mm-hmm. I was already right there. And I knew that I wanted hard walls because a lot of my products are heavier. I needed, you know, something that I could hang actual shelving on. So I did hours and hours of YouTube research onto how to build these booth walls. And I went home to visit my family up there in Rhode Island. And we, you know, I had an entire color-coded spreadsheet of like what materials we were going to be buying at Home Depot. And we basically got, you know, good quality materials, but as cheap as we could get them. You know, you don't need a ton of stability because it's just for 4 days or whatever the case is.
Right.
And so my intention was, I knew I was going to be doing trade shows season to season. So I wanted something that I could use over again to then disperse the costs throughout the years. So my mom and I built our booth hard walls all at home. And for the fixtures, I used existing IKEA furniture that I already had that I thought would work in this space. I specifically designed the booth around those dimensions so that it would work. And then I got the smallest booth they offered. I really tried to maximize every inch of that in my display. And I really, you know, we really did everything ourselves. We didn't outsource any part of the build or the setup in that matter either.
Yeah. Your booth was beautiful. And I had a lot of people come up to me and say, she does not look like a first-time exhibitor. Like, her products are amazing. Her booth looks amazing. It's so on brand. I'm sure you heard that same feedback, or at least I hope you heard that same feedback.
Everyone's mouths like hit the floor when I told them it was my first show, because they're like, surely that's not the case. And it felt nice because I think it gave me an extra edge of, oh, this company is for real, they're meaning business. They want to be here. I think a lot of times first-time exhibitors get passed by because companies don't necessarily want to invest in materials or products in general that might not be around in 5 years. You know, if they have a good rapport with the company, they want to keep that going. And I think by making such a big splash on my first couple shows, it was nice to say, like, I'm here to stay and this is something I want to be doing long-term.
Yeah, I take it seriously. I'm showing up. I know. You've heard this story from me in the past, and I tell it at Paper Camp all the time, of there was a particular buyer that came to my booth for 4 years straight before he placed an order. And it was the same thing. He wanted to make sure I was going to be around, and I was continuing to develop my work and taking it seriously. So yeah, I do think the show scene has changed quite a bit, but I think presenting a great first impression the way you did is always important. and you did a really nice job with it. You know, what advice would you give to someone who is, you know, where you were at the beginning, thinking about shifting a creative hobby into a business, whether it's handmade items or something they're going to produce, you know, in larger scale? But like, what would you tell them?
I would say that it's a good idea to develop things that you love and that you're passionate about. I think if it's just on a whim and you're not wholly invested, it does take a lot out of you. It's a lot of time investment. It's a lot of your own money investment up front, especially. So I think if it's something that in your heart you feel like you can't wake up or breathe without thinking about, then you should hands down go for it. I know that I still wake up and I think about this business 24/7. It's what I want to be doing. It's my own child basically at this point. And I think if that's how you feel about what you're thinking of starting, then you should definitely just go for it, but definitely be intentional and do a lot of research into the market that you're trying to enter. I mean, don't just launch a product willy-nilly with no price point research or market research. You know, I think that was a large impact that I got from school in fashion, is that you do market research. You look at what your competitors are doing. You look at what the market can bear for the price point. You know, you have to know all these things to make a business an actual business and not a hobby.
Right. Oh, I love that. Well, what's next for the Paper Curator? What do you have coming up in 2020 here?
So we're doing this National Stationery Show again. It's our new favorite home for whatever 3 days that we get to be there. So with that, we're launching a whole new smattering of products in our existing categories and maybe a few new ones. We'll have to wait and see.
Teaser.
And, you know, we're launching a new catalog size, so some new photo shoots and stuff in store. It'll be really exciting.
Oh, I can't wait to see. This is going to be fun. Well, where can people find you online if they want to check out your products or follow you on social media?
So online, we're at thepapercurator.com/shop or just thepapercurator.com if you want to visit the blog. And then we are also on Instagram primarily at Cecily_thepapercurator, and that's Cecily_thepapercurator. Awesome. And at The Paper Curator on all other social platforms, Twitter, awesome. Pinterest, etc.
All of the places. We will include that in the show notes so people can easily link out to you. And I just really appreciate you taking time to come and share your story with us. And yeah, thank you, Cecily. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Katie. It's so much fun chatting with you.
Thanks so much for spending time with us today. Head on over to proof2product.com to join the conversation, access our show notes, and discover free resources to help you build your product-based business. We'll be back next week with a new episode. Thanks again.